Blog
Options on this wonderful August day, August 7th, 2011. We have an incredible show coming up today with Randy White and Arnold Strong of BrightNeighbor.com. It's a project that they're doing to bring communities together. I love it when someone steps in and begins to do something about this mess we are in. I have a couple of announcements before we bring our people on. We are being brought to you today by Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, and this is a software program put out by our research center, Sound Health and Bioacoustic Biology. We originally created this under the auspices of the Army with our traumatic brain injury project, but we thought this one was so important that we put it on YouTube for you. So you can go to youtube.com, and there is a Sound Health channel, or you can find it under Sherry Edwards, S-H-A-R-R-Y Edwards. And there is a complete class there for you about post-traumatic stress disorder. We found 8 different nutrients that are involved, and we're also providing you free software of how you can look at those nutrients and see if maybe this is a biochemical kind of issue. I guess I should have told you that I'm Sherry Edwards, your host. Richard is out today. I'll be flying solo. I love it when Richard is here. He makes the show so much easier. We are also being brought to you by our radiation rescue software, and this is particularly important for those of you on that West Coast. We're doing some projects with Western Canada, Washington, Oregon, and Northern California, and we have found a way to show you through a computer program that what your exposure is, whether you're being exposed to iodine or strontium or cobalt. This really quick computer program can tell you what you're being exposed to and how to nutritionally combat it, what foods to eat to nutritionally combat radiation exposure. So that is on our website, soundhealthoptions.com, and at the top there is a roll bar. So wait till the little girl comes around with a little pink sweater on, hit the get the software little button there, and it'll take you through how to get that software so you can have it for yourself and your community. Those two we think are incredibly important. Not a lot of people are helping take care of our returning soldiers, so we really want to make sure that that happens. Okay, I have one announcement. I know we usually do lots. For those of you who are looking for us on WebEx, we do not have WebEx today. I don't know what happened to that. It's just not there. So I would invite you to go to Bright Neighbor, and bright just like, you know, sunlight, bright, neighbor.com, and that's what I would have been sharing with you. Their blog is particularly interesting in what they provide. And we're going to be talking to Randy White and Arnold Strong in just a few minutes. But this is an important announcement, I think, that needs to be brought to the forefront. You know, we have been talking about the detriment of Obamacare and some of the new laws and some of the new standards of care and standards of practice that just don't make any sense at all. So somebody's doing something about it. This was written by Jacob Teitenbaum, M.D., and it's on healthier, H-E-A-L-T-H-I-E-R, talk.com. and it's an article called New Law Makes Health Legal. Now, that's a crazy title, but that's where we are. New Law Makes Health Legal. And this is a law coming out of New Hampshire, and I posted the name of the bill on the chat line here at Blog Talk, and it's Health HB 295 Lyme Bill. Now, what is happening in New Hampshire is that the law, the government, not the doctors, the lawyers are insisting that doctors can only use lab tests to treat Lyme disease, which is kind of crazy. And I'm going to read you some of this. The biggest problem with Lyme disease is that it's quickly identified and treated. It can, if not quickly identified and treated, it can become chronic, causing symptoms, joint pain, weak muscles, fatigue, depression, mental confusion, facial paralysis. And this is not reading. I'm going to tell you something we just found out about Lyme disease in our research clinic, that it attacks the nerves of the digestive system so that you have chronic and repeated attacks of extreme bowel pain. That's not another polite way to word this. Lots of diarrhea, lots of cramping, lots of gas, even the muscles in the stomach begin to cramp, so there's a lot of nausea and vomiting. So in addition to these other symptoms, we're going to add that because that's been consistent through our research. But by lab standards for chronic Lyme disease are horribly unreliable. I'm reading again. Missing many, if not most, cases. And I suspect that certain specialized tests are over-diagnosing this condition. That's why the diagnosis of chronic Lyme is based largely on a clinical history and a physical exam, along with a therapeutic response to antibiotics. Now, one of the things that we have been finding, too, is people appearing in our lab with Lou Gehrig's disease, they really have Lyme disease. So this is important. It is started like Lyme disease, and if it looks like Lyme disease and it responds to medication from Lyme disease, it's probably Lyme's disease. But unfortunately, standard medical practice states that you have to treat the person according to the blood test and ignore the complaints and symptoms of the patient. This is crazy. This often results in patients dying of Lyme's. It means that the patient is dead, but the blood tests were top-notch. So the doctor gets a pat on the back, and I'm reading it again, for a job well done. No, I'm not kidding. This actually happens, says this article. To make matters worse, some state medical boards will take away a doctor's license if they treat the patient instead of using the blood test to treat the patient. And this includes giving antibiotics to patients with chronic Lyme. Even when patients dramatically improve, shockingly, many medical boards consider the patient's improvement to be largely irrelevant. So New Hampshire has passed this law, and I hope it's the first of many. And it went into effect June 9th, 2011. The law prevents the state medical board from taking away a doctor's license for treating chronic Lyme with antibiotics. And this is reading from this article. In my view, this law is a crucial step in ensuring patient freedom and access to care, a type of freedom and access that is crucial for chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and Lyme patients. Incredible. New Hampshire House Bill 295, Lyme Bill becomes law. And I think you're going to see more and more of this as this atrocious, non-thought-out, incredibly stupid, in my opinion, Obamacare law, as they try to push it on all of us. Okay, that's enough of my soapbox for today. All of you our regular listeners know that we have had B.B. Fauber on our show from World TV, and she introduced us to these guys, Randy White and Arnold Strong with a little video and showed what they were doing for their neighborhood. And I hope this just catches fire and goes throughout the world. I talked to Randy on email, and he is the world's first all-in-one community resource sharing and sustainable agricultural system. He is the founder, and I think Arnold is the CEO of Bright Neighbor, and they're trying to collect people together on the internet, and I don't know what else kind of bringing together he does, but we're going to ask him, because they have pioneered a multiple sustainable, I think it's a computer program, that's very innovative, and it brings people together in ideas of agriculture and food sharing, tree planting, ride sharing, social networks, and we're going to bring Randy on. His bio says that he is a leader in software innovation since he was a teen growing up in Alaska. He headed up an internet technology division of startups and crafted the internet business agriculture as one of the world's largest media companies. In addition to running a software company, Randy enjoys life as a public speaker, sustainability consultant, peak oil and energy analysis, urban farmer, musician, stand-up comedian, film producer, advertising director, husband, and most recently, a proud papa. Randy White, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us on, Sherry.
Would you please introduce your CEO of the company to us?
Yes, also on the line is Arnold Strong, CEO of Bright Neighbor, for the specific purpose that he is an amazing communicator with a master's degree in strategic communication and also an American hero who is an Iraq and Afghanistan veteran and is a colonel in the Army. And there are he has such an amazing pedigree of leadership skills, I thought, with the absolute need for the challenges that we have in the future, for the leadership that we have, that to bring somebody with both civilian and military leadership to the helm of Bright Neighbor. And Arnold will be able to give you the specifics of his history. But as a software and farming person myself, who grew up in a military family, I thought that kind of leadership was necessary. And so we have an amazing leader at the helm, Arnold Strong.
Well, Sherry, good morning. It's nice to be on the show with you and your listeners. And, you know, anytime that I can further spread the word about Bright Neighbor with Randy, I jump on the opportunity. Randy and I have been working together for a little over a year and really sort of taking Bright Neighbor, what we call an online tool that drives offline behavior, into a couple different markets where the software we've used here regionally in the Portland, Oregon area, we've got a partnership with Portland General Electric, the local energy provider, with the city of Portland, and with several small regional companies or municipalities, is really sort of a crowdsourced collaboration software that enables you to populate around interests and assets that you're willing to share inside your community. And so being a veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan, having dealt with an awful lot of veterans' issues, I'm very glad to hear your outreach and support for dealing with post-traumatic stress, and we're hoping to do sort of the same solution, different method in focusing veterans and working within their communities. So it's really an honor to be on your show.
Well, thank you. And tell me how you two very bright, pioneering people came up with this idea for Bright Neighbor.
Well, Randy, why don't you take the general Bright Neighbor concept, and I'll talk about what we're doing with the Heroes Network.
Sure. The impetus behind Bright Neighbor occurred when I was the online director for one of the world's largest media companies. And as an energy analyst, who volunteered with the city. We had the first municipality report that was put out with the Portland Peak Oil Task Force in the year 2006. And this task force interviewed the CEOs and vice presidents and government, business, community leaders from the Pacific Northwest, including large grocery chains, large energy companies, to look future forward and say what is coming down the line in terms of the economy and the planet, and where are we going to be in a few years with rising oil prices, food prices? How is that going to affect the average business? And it was alarming, the results that this report put out, is that the first city to actually say, how is this going to affect our dollars in terms of costs of budgets being hit, and your average farmer, the prices for their inputs, and how this affects every aspect of our lives, including health. And that report really the results of that report really opened my eyes. At the same time, my brother Chris was the crew chief for Tommy Franks at the time. And Tommy Franks was the commander of CENTCOM, who is the commander who oversees the general activities for the Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines. And he had traveled around the world laying the groundwork for a lot of the Middle East activities. And in March of 2005, my brother unfortunately took his own life. And that shock to the system of myself, my family, really turned my world upside down. And if you look at what is affecting people now, it's trauma. We are all facing different types of trauma. As a matter of fact, the United States just took a traumatic hit Friday evening with the downgrade of our credit. And come Monday morning, tomorrow, we don't know the exact ramifications of what that means, but probability, it says that the markets are going to have a fear mode and a panic mode. And Bright Neighbor came about as a solution to be able to fix the ills that we have at the local level, since we live in a globalized world, and that's good. We need global commerce. We need free trade and some aspects. But at the other side of the spectrum, we really need to focus on the health of our own communities. And so the system was launched. It was developed by a team of engineers, and the system was launched in the city of Portland in late 2007. And it takes a while to build up. Just because you launch an internet site does not mean that you've accomplished anything. It means you've actually just begun. But what we did before the massive rise of Facebook and additional online social media tools is we were the first all-in-one social media system that had the context. The technology itself isn't as revolutionary as the context of the use of the technology, where we focused and said, hey, what is important here? What would we need to do in our communities if the dollar crashed? What would we need to do in our communities if we looked and said fuel prices could double or triple in cost? Oil could go up, food prices. What would we do? And we would need to begin to, once again, like America used to do, rely on one another more, be able to extract $3 of value from one. And what I mean by that is if you have an asset, like let's say a bike, a lawnmower, garden tools, your health skills, that maybe your grandmother told you some secrets with herbs that you can fix a cold with, that is all valuable. And instead of having to go out and purchase something, people want to save their dollars now and tighten their belts. And so it's a sharing mentality. However, we have found by sharing at the local level with neighbors and community members, it actually increases your local economies and dollar velocity. And I'll bring up one example and then turn it over to Arnold, is that, for instance, when you create an inventory of things or skills or resources you're willing to share, I happen to, in my inventory of things, that's, it says, hey, what would you like to share and with your neighbors? One, it's a great way to meet them because somebody searching for, let's say, a hammer or whatever it is can say, huh, wow, I didn't even know this neighbor liked the Portland Trailblazers, because it also, you can talk a bit about yourself and let someone get to know you in an easy manner. Well, that has actually led to me hiring out somebody because I didn't have the necessary skills to do the job I was trying to do myself. So I said, well, not only can you use the hammer, why don't you just come over and I'll hire you to, you know, help fix this back porch of mine. So it's not just about sharing resources. It's about building local economies and rebuilding those local economies.
I think this is incredible. It goes back to that old neighbor integrity that we have lost with our busy lives and driving hours to work and putting in lots of hours. It's just a very nice idea. I love this Allison thing on your blog. Allison wants to adopt a turtle. So it's not just getting things done. It's adding a quality to people's lives and to know their... It's great.
Yeah, the main question I ask audiences when speaking is, I ask a question that often people don't think about, and it's, what would we do if money went away tomorrow? And if you look at what is happening at the global level with the dollar, with the euro, with the amount of debt that has been piled up for country after country after country, it's not just the debt that we are having to tackle. It's the question of, what is money? Because these days, money is debt. And when money is created, it's actually it's created as a debt against a future population that is expected to pay that back for the way we're living in the present manner. And frankly, my daughter is almost 2 years old, and I owe it to her to wake up every day to try to deliver a lifestyle that I have been so blessed to grow up with in an era where energy and food costs were relatively cheap, and we had the luxury to be able to be hermits and keep to ourselves if we so chose. Well, our mission every day at Bright Neighbor, which Arnold is taking the helm of, is to prepare for and activate and mobilize our citizens for a present that focuses on making sure we have local food system integrity and a continuity of supplies. And there are all sorts of different people that join Bright Neighbor in a community. You have someone who is looking to discover more about their neighbors in a city where, even though you may live with so many people, you can be very lonely. And this makes it easy to say, you know, who lives around me that also enjoys dog walking or has, you know, is willing to share a ride to church or to really rebuild our community based on beauty and gardening and saving money and really getting together around building a better future at that local level. And the folks that are in the system, there's so much knowledge between everyone that we can extract as a community and leverage one another. You don't have to be best friends with everyone you live around. That's just impossible. But you can leverage one another and help one another and at least be courteous. And that's what the thinking behind Bright Neighbor is, as well as logistical structured plans for working with local farmers, for instance, to connect city people who are wanting to get involved and say, how can I help? What can we do to rebuild local food systems, fuel systems, and build community structure? And so under Arnold's leadership, we're connecting veterans, returning veterans who are unemployed or out of work with opportunities in a sustainable thinking to build a better future for themselves, for their family, and the localities that Bright Neighbor is deployed in.
I would like to make a suggestion and take this a step further, and this is totally out of a situation that happened at my house last week, last Monday, actually. A young kid was coming over this big hill where we live and on a motorcycle, and he hit a deer. And it threw him in the ditch with the motorcycle on top of him. And I was the nearest one, and I could not lift that motorcycle off of him. And if it hadn't been for this guy near just accidentally being home, he wasn't supposed to, this kid would have been more severely burnt than he was. And so for me, and we have about 3,000 people in our bioacoustic network that I want to put this together with, but just my own neighbors, I realized then I don't even have the phone numbers of my closest neighbors. So when things like that happen, you know, I was going to be forced to find a 2x4 or something and try to lift this motorcycle off this kid. And long story short here, broken ribs, collapsed lung, punctured lung, severely broken shoulder, and burns from this. So putting together this emergency system is something, and I didn't see that on your site, and I tried to go through a lot of it, but just in case something happens, you know, these people would be there to not only lend you a hammer, but lend you a hand when you
well,
get into the situation.
I'll let Arnold speak to the capabilities of using Bright Neighbor as a crisis resource, because you're exactly right, Sherry.
Okay.
Yeah, Sherry, that's a great segue. You know, we recently went through first just tying this to your greater interest in post-traumatic stress and helping reintegrating soldiers. I mentioned that one of our outreaches is to that community. You know, Randy being an Air Force brat, you know, a guy that grew up in an Air Force military family and whose, you know, siblings went on to join the service as well. And myself being a veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan, our director of operations being a career Army NCO who recently retired, I mean, we very much got a respect for and understanding of that military community. And we recognized here in Oregon that Oregon had the second highest rate of veteran suicides in the United States, and that we've got really high unemployment amongst new veterans. Never minding veterans that are veterans from Vietnam or Korea or the Gulf War, and realized that one of the things that was really missing is an online forum, if you will, to help link these veterans and assets and resources and jobs and you know, rooms for lease or rooms for borrow. We found some members of our network that will actually give a veteran a hand up rather than a hand out and give them a place to live for a couple months. Well, we had, realizing that, we launched what we call the HEROES Network, HEROES as an acronym for Helping Everyone Reintegrate, Offering Everyone Support. And inside that network in Oregon, you can log in to find information, see other friends that are online that happen to be members of your unit. Maybe there are people that you served with. Maybe there are people that maybe a family resource provider is online at that time, and enables you to have sort of a closed network where you can actually communicate with a little bit of confidentiality, not in a forum where you're going to have all your private information, you know, culled and collated and sold to advertisers. So we found a way to actually build community online in order to drive offline, action, or, you know, an online tool that drives offline behavior. And recently we just had an experience where a soldier had posted their desire to end their life and posted it in that forum, and we were able, through that, to actually, you know, take note, get the proper members of the chain of command involved, and stop that action from taking place. And so that was a small success that we'll never know how big it was, in that, you know, by 6 o'clock in the evening that night, when the service member had posted their intent to take their own life in the morning, we were able to prevent it. And that's really what tools like this are really all about.
In our bioacoustic community, then we would also take that next step and try to find out what's going on biochemically and emotionally for that person. Do you have that built in?
Go ahead,
Randy. Yeah, that's more a technical question. That's not necessarily what we really focus on, but go ahead, Randy.
Correct. Yeah, we're not at the level of bioacoustic type of module or feature here. What our software focuses on is providing the tools for communication where it's at a cognitive level, not a chemical level, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, a resource that would be able to bring up something that can help somebody discover that type of health solution, if that's for them, would certainly be something that could be communicated by the community to one another, or really it's a focus on the exploring the places in the network that are built into the mapping functionality, events that are happening that are community events that allow people to, for instance, have built-in ride sharing to and from that event to save money on the fuel and get to know one another better. The people in the network to allow you to find the folks in your community that naturally, the low-hanging fruit, if you will, of who you're going to be able to get along with based on shared interests and location around one another, and then sharing of assets, skills, resources, and what you're willing to share. Now, by sharing, too, it doesn't just necessarily mean that it's a barter economy, even though we have people that have received language lessons in exchange for getting their pants hemmed, for instance, that there's a barter element. But, you know, you can also rent something out to one another and say, I will rent out a lawnmower, or I will rent something out. And it can also be used as a mechanism to generate side money, especially with when it comes to jobs and careers, and the difference between those two is a lot of returning veterans are coming back to no career. Now, they may be able to find short-term jobs. Let's say if they have skills where they're able to do a project-based thing, maybe help somebody do some roofing work or anything around homes. That's side cash. That's not a career. So, but what we are doing is helping people at least sustain themselves so they can get to that next level of their lives. And, you know, part of that is maybe they want to start a roofing company after doing some roofing projects and really build up an entrepreneurial support network where maybe they can meet that partner that they needed to get that business going and focus on that. So it's more of a network to increase your knowledge and make use and extract value from existing resources that can be pooled together. But there's no particular chemical aspect or really, from what you're doing with Sound Health, focus on the bio aspect like that.
Okay, we have about 3,000 people in our network that have learned to do this, and then thousands more that are a piece of what we do. I want to put this together for them, but I see that you're put together in a geographic location kind of thing. Tell me, and everybody listening here is going to be interested in this, step one, step two, step three, how does a community, how does a group with like interests get in touch with you and put this in place? Is it
Sherry, let me take a quick stab at that, because I'm going to I'll be able to sort of give you sort of a short explanation of what we're hoping to do in scaling this nationwide. But then also, you know, probably like a lot of your listeners, I've also got to abbreviate my time on the show because I've got to get ready to go to my Sunday church. So I'd like to just real quickly let you know that Bright Neighbor is at a point right now where we are preparing to scale nationally. We've got a really strong community here in Portland, Oregon, and that's the portland.brightneighbor.com. Or if you go to brightneighbor.com, it sort of sets up as a default to view that specific community development. But we've got several corporate and municipal deployments that we're working right now for further scale. But if you or your listeners know of or have an interest in building a community that you are able to connect online, building an extensive network focused around interests and assets, maybe those assets actual tangible assets or intangible human resources and experiential resources and skill sets, then I would encourage you to drop a line to either Randy or myself. We're Randy at or Arnold at brightneighbor.com, brightneighbor.com, and tell us about your interest. Tell us about your community and tell us about what you're hoping to use it for, and we can certainly figure out if we're a right match for that community's needs.
What's the cost of something like this?
Well, I think that's why we're having... we need to finish developing the ability to scale it at a much larger level than what we have with the past several years of piloting it within each of the communities. Is we're looking to lower the cost, because it's not just the software whenever you're licensed. There are lots. I mean, you can use Facebook for free, for instance, to go try to accomplish some of these same things that we have put together through leadership with Bright Neighbor. However, our system also comes with support of the people behind the network to help build that community over time and offering the support for that. So, you know, the cost for a corporation, for instance, who uses our software privately to create a sustainability system for their employee network would be different than the cost for a nonprofit church, for instance. But, you know, it could be anywhere as low as a few thousand dollars per year up to just whatever we need to customize for a particular customer. Because as much as we're a social company, we are a business and we are creating jobs. We're creating jobs for leaders that we train to help build these types of communities and really offering a tool as well as people power behind this. For instance, there are projects that we need to train someone on, for instance, for helping leverage the space available in a community with yards to do cooperative local urban gardening and farming. And if person A is growing tomatoes and person B is growing potatoes, and they find that they could exchange that for an exchange that makes them both happy, there is a lot of support where we have experts in, for instance, farming, gardening, health, and it's really extracting the resources of that particular community and helping everyone say, okay, what do we have here with these 100 people or 1,000 people or 10,000 people? What do we have in terms of value of what people know and what they have and how they can help one another? And really, we're connectors, and we're helping connect. And unlike something like Craigslist, where it's just about money, our network helps you go beyond money, because, again, all of that is changing in front of our eyes. And we need to look at our communities not as just something that we can say we'll make things better in the future. Things will get better. It's about getting active and helping, being part of making it better. So I know it's a long-winded way to answer your question of how much it costs, but it could be as few thousand dollars up to, and that's if the community pools its resource to deploy it. For instance, it could be free to someone who wants to take the lead in a community and help set it up, and then if someone else joins it, it could be zero cost to them. It's somebody has to take the lead, though, and with that comes support. So that's why it's a varied answer.
Randy, I just tell you, Sherry, that it's a scalable model, and it's also a sliding scale, recognizing that we've got community deployments, we've got nonprofit deployments, we've got corporate deployments, and it all really matters is the size, scope, and scale of what kind of deployment it is. I mean, we've seen license-based relationships. They're a few thousand dollars a year for a small corporation, or we've seen community deployments that are ultimately very low cost because they're sort of driven on the transactional value that comes out of it with each one of those communities. So I think the easiest way of answering it is, like I said up front, just, if your listeners or yourself want to find out more, drop a line to randy@brightneighbor.com, and we'd love to give you some more information. And with that, I've actually got to leave the line, and I just wanted to say again how much I very much appreciate you having us on your show.
Well, you are most welcome. And why I brought up this question is the flyer that's on your site about ask your mayor to set up a Bright Neighbor system in your town or city.
Yeah.
So you guys are already prepared to allow this to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, we're moving into a couple other municipalities here in Oregon, and one of the conversations we're having next month in early September is really how to scale that much more efficiently across the nation, because we've got other municipalities outside of our Pacific Northwestern region that are looking to do this. But again, thank you so much for having me on your show. And if Randy, if you want to continue, I'm going to have to break the line, but I'll follow up with you afterward and we'll listen to it from its archive.
Okay, thanks, Arnold.
Yeah, thanks
thank
so much.
Thank you, Arnold. I have a dozen more questions. And one of the questions from the chat room you've already answered, how is this different from Craigslist? In looking at this, if someone in Ohio wanted to be a member of your Oregon group, would they just get in touch with you and say, I want to sign up?
Yes, and then we would look at the opportunity to expand to Ohio, for instance. We need to look at, because we are a smaller company and we are a startup, and we poured our personal resources into building this company. We're not Craigslist, we're not Facebook, we don't have millions of dollars and thousands of programmers behind us right now. We are a company of military and farmers and software folks who are out to expand this, even just type of thinking. If in any of these areas where people are listening, they take the type of thinking and can use Craigslist or Facebook or Meetup or a variety of different tools out there, then we're still winning. It's not just about the money. It's about doing what is right. And what is right is to take this conversation and this way of thinking and to apply it at the local level. And we can offer that leadership. So it's not just the software tools. And that's a very important distinction to make. It's about making it easier for someone to thrive locally. And I tell you, I enjoy saving money just as much as the next person, but what I really enjoyed is taking the risk of saying, you know, I'm going to offer up a ride to this event and put it out there in the community, and I've never met this person before, but there are background checks and there are ways to make sure that the person that you're lending something to has a record of being a good community member. And you know, there that's something actually I'd like to bring up too, is there are other types of sharing sites that are starting to take this idea and build up. There's one that focuses specifically around renting out your car, for instance, or renting out to your or sharing anything really. And there are instances where somebody may misrepresent themselves And those systems, not in ours. We've not had a single instance of anything like this. But I've heard a horror story or two of some stranger saying, I'm this person or that person, and fraudulently representing themselves, and someone will lend them their thing, and then they get it back trashed or whatnot. That's a reality, and everything's a double-edged sword. So what we are providing is a tool to build up trusted community members and say, you know, this person's lived here 5 years and they have a great reputation as a stellar community member who's helped out with this, this, that, and that. And really be able to build up a trusted community of people who want to help one another. And so, you know, one of the criticisms of a sharing mentality is just that. And you know what? Through the history of humanity, there have always just been people who try to ruin the party for everyone else. And there's no way to avoid that other than having leadership that says, okay, if you want to join this community, we'd like to, you know, ask you some questions, just like joining any other club, of either a background check that you could go as specific as getting a police background check on someone, and or you could simply say, what have you done in our community? What are you willing to share? And, who else here knows you that can verify this? Kind of like other systems where you have ratings, if on eBay, for instance, whether you have come through and actually delivered on what you said you were going to sell, and people can rate. That's the type of evolution that is happening with this way of being in a community, and this type of behavior. Because I would be very upset if I lent something out and it came back trashed, and I'm the guy that invented this thing.
Well, we have another question from our audience. That is, this just a closed network in Oregon and a closed network in Dallas and a closed network in Florida? Or is this a network that goes, every piece knows every other piece?
Well, that's what Arnold was speaking to, and the way we're looking to scale this. We are developing it right now to be able to allow anyone to just start their own Bright Neighbor community wherever they want, because we are in a situation where the support for starting a community takes we really pour into each of our communities that are starting up, because it's associated with the Bright Neighbor name and what we stand for. And so we work personally with the community that is starting up. We haven't just fired it up so that anyone can just start one anywhere yet, because we want to know who we're working with to say, look, this is what a Bright Neighbor community is about, are these types of things and what support we can offer. And firing it up, we're getting to the point where we're going to be able to scale where somebody can start their own network anywhere, and that's what our programmers are developing right now, and be able to scale much faster. Right now it's one by one, each community that's starting up, we're working with them, and it doesn't take very long. But it is a login. You do log into the community. You do have your own profile as a your own things that you say you want to share, and there's a security element. You have to log in. Certainly, there's also a double security layer that maybe, for instance, Sherry, you have some DVDs or books or things that you'd want to share, but not with everyone in the community. You don't want everybody knowing that you have this thing. You can select and say, well, you know, only these 10 people can know that I have these things available, and create a secondary private list of things. So we've made all sorts of considerations, but the answer to the question is you do need to work with us right now if you would like to start a Bright Neighbor system in your community. Again, the difference between our system and, let's say, something like Craigslist is that is a there's no background on Craigslist. There have been instances of somebody saying, I'm going to sell a couch, and then the person showing up to pick up the couch ends up, you know, robbing that person's home. There are horror stories with everything. What Bright Neighbor does is help reduce the anxiety of not knowing who you're dealing with.
I can see how this would be great for gasoline savings. You know, as of Friday, gas was down per barrel about 89 cents or $89. And when gas or oil prices go up, within hours, gas prices go up. Now, gas prices have not gone down in our community, even though this was announced last week, that oil's down to $89 a gallon. So we're being gouged. Gas companies are reporting record highs on our back. So this is a way for us also to push back.
Well, it's a way to push back. And if you, again, from the results of the peak oil task force, it doesn't take a conspiracy theorist or anybody from either side of the political spectrum very long to realize that we are in a situation, whether it's devious price controls or manipulation, or the fact that we are running out of this stuff eventually. You know, there may be a lot left, but eventually running out of stuff. You cannot deny that energy is completely linked to our monetary system. And if people are unable to find a job to pay for that gasoline, they're going to have to, at some point, look at ways to get around that, unless they want to really build up their health via walking everywhere. We're going to have to say, how can we save money at the same time still get from A to B? We don't have a vehicle problem in this country. We have a fuel problem. There are plenty of vehicles. And so doesn't it just make common sense to say, how can we extract more value from the fleet of vehicles that we have and save more money? And it makes me proud that we're even looking at a safe mechanism for dealing with our energy challenges. But at the same time, again, people feel very differently and passionately about this subject, with the food versus fuel debate, for instance. But we have a community that is growing sorghum as a fuel crop to fix soils. Now, again, one of the issues is conventional farmers that are dependent on these oil prices and fertilizer prices that are going to completely increase over time. They're starting to ask themselves, okay, wait a minute. I, as a farmer, have been using this petroleum-based farming system for a long time, and boy, this is really getting expensive. Maybe I should do this organic thing, because the prices for organic stuff will allow me to make a good living as a farmer. So I'm going to switch over. Well, it takes them 3 years when they decide to switch from conventional farming to organic before they can get certified as an organic farmer. Now, if you're a farmer, are you going to not have income for 3 years? I don't think so. So a transition crop that doesn't have to be organic would be a fuel crop. And by the time you're done with your 3 years, you now have soil that's organic, that's living, that's the way Mother Nature intended it, that's full of worms and really grows food well. But those first 3 years, your yields drop tremendously, and you need to not be using oil-based fertilizers, for instance. Well, you can grow sorghum, which gives you 10 times the amount of fuel as corn, and sell that to a community who can distill it and turn it into a fuel and run engines that run gasoline engines, which is a small conversion. And we've actually proven this. We've proven this model through Bright Neighbor, and that's the type of leadership that, I mean, comes along with it, is there are technical aspects to sustainability that you can't just fire up a software system on. There's going to be retraining. There's going to be reskilling. There's going to be organization of project-based projects that allow people to learn new job skills that then they can apply towards themselves and say, man, I just learned this amazing knowledge. I'm going to start a business. And five of you that we did this project with, let's start a business, pool our resources. And really what we're trying to do is reignite the American innovation and passion to say, what can we do at a local level that will support our local economy, be healthy for ourselves, for our family, and allow us to not only save money, but make money, because money still does exist. It's always existed. It's just the form and the value of that is changing. And we're entering uncharted territory right now with what money means again and what wealth means. And what we found with the Bright Neighbor community is that wealth is being rediscovered as spending more time with people in your community, not isolating yourselves to just an online community or a smartphone chatting with people, but getting together, having potluck dinners, rebuilding very much, if you will, a church mentality of what it means to socialize and support one another. And so we're bringing the values of community back to community. And it's not rocket science. It's just bringing conversation to say, how can we, with so many challenges, step back, simplify, and support one another in the face of everything that's going on? And maybe we can find more value in having less of a need to go out and make things so complex. And I tell you, Sherry, our mission is succeeding if a community is healthy, if it's happy, and that we're reducing suffering in the face of all these challenges. So that's our mission, and we very much appreciate you allowing us to come here and discuss it with you today.
So people can get in touch with you at brightneighbor.com or
brightneighbor.com.
Arnold at brightneighbor.com or Randy, R-A-N-D-Y, at brightneighbor.com. Randy, can you think of anybody that this would not be useful to?
Well, I am optimistic. I'm optimistic because there are always naysayers, and I am a pessimist and an optimist myself, and I can always find criticism in myself to try to make improvements. And I'm a jokester. I love comedy, and I love laughing with people. And no matter what, either political or business or whatever ideologies are held, I can find something to agree on with someone. And when someone says this needs improvement or that won't work, I listen. And what I've found is that this does apply to everyone. Now, there may be communities that are more focused on themselves, and they can create a closed-loop community just for a certain type of people. We have a synagogue that has Bright Neighbor, and they wanted for their own community just for themselves, and that's what it's about. You can launch your own. It's the values behind the community and sharing, and those are across the world. It doesn't matter what type of person you are, you can apply the Bright Neighbor way of thinking to your community. So the answer to your question is, I think it applies to everyone.
Well, thank you, Randy. I want to let people know that our next Guardian meeting is August 14th, I think, next Sunday, whatever that is. And it will be about adrenal burnout, and we'll be providing you software and a workshop. Our next happy hour is on the 16th. We'll be doing free vocal profiles. And I'm thinking we're going to have Randy and Arnold back because there's more aspects of this I would certainly like to know about. And we're out of time, and I appreciate all of your listeners. Please let your neighbors know that this is going to be available on Blog Talk Radio. I think all of us need to pull together in the face of what's going on with our national misdirected leaders. They are not in touch with the people, and I think that's exactly what Randy and his group is doing, trying to put the people in touch with each other, because I think that's where we miss out. So thank all of you for being here. We'll be here next week, and hopefully Richard will be back with us. We miss him, and we'll just talk to you later.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Randy. I'll be calling you later about some things I'd like to share with your people.
Great. Excellent. Well, appreciate the...